So let's continue on a little bit by talking about romance and love from Valentine's, regardless of whether you were hurt or not.
That's right. We had a pretty nice Valentine's Day. We shared it.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about love a little bit here tonight. And in fact, just to kind of get your wheels turning and make sure you have the right attitude as we think about talking of love this evening, why don't you just turn to somebody near you, just say these words, "You really need this." You feel better, don't you? So let me do this. I want to ask you guys, if you were to design a recipe for romantic love, what ingredients would be in your recipe? What ingredients would go into romantic love? In fact, do this. Take 10 seconds with two or three other people with you, just literally 10 seconds, to say, "Oh, I know these ingredients would be important to me in romantic love." Go to it. 10 seconds. You got it right now. All right. So what do you got? Holler them out. What do you got? Ingredients of romantic love. Give them to me real fast. Wave me down. What?
Listening.
All right.
Trust.
Thoughtfulness.
Time.
Patience.
Giving.
What?
Communication.
Understanding. Forgiveness.
Quality time.
Food. Food. We're going to end on food. All right. So lots of ingredients go into romantic love, right?
That's right. And what we want to do, though, is really unpack that, because so often we leave it to the poets and the philosophers, but we want to take it to a different level.
Yeah, lyricists, musicians, right. Social scientists haven't had a lot to say about romantic love. Till what, maybe 15 years ago, Robert Sternberg at Yale University did this massive study on romantic love, came up with something that he calls, are you ready for this? He calls it the triangular theory of love. The triangular theory of love. Didn't that bless you? I know you're excited. That sounds like a major sleeper, I know, but it's not. It's one of the most practical definitions of love that we know of. He said, after doing all this research, you can basically boil it down to three essential ingredients. Number one, you can write them on each side of this triangle, and the first of these is the word passion. Passion. I don't know if anybody said passion, but passion, he said, is one of the top three. Passion is the biological side of love. This is the side of love that there's nothing particularly noble about it, because it's just biological by nature. It just kind of flows with the hormones. It's probably what got the two of you together in the first place if you're a couple, right? And in fact, somebody said that passion, though a bad regulator, is a good spring. Mm-hmm. In other words, passion is really good at getting love going, not so good at keeping love going. I also love what Ralph Waldo Emerson said about passion. He said, it's the mob of the man that commits a riot upon his reason, right? Why? Because there's not much reasoning involved in passion. It's just biological by nature. I gave a lecture series a little while ago at Purdue University, and to the Marriage and Family School, and afterwards they gave me a fantastic tour through their state-of-the-art facilities, and I asked them, what are you learning in research these days? They said, well, we just did this longitudinal study on passion in marriage. And I said, what surprised you? Because that's always the most interesting thing in research. What surprised you? They said, well, we just didn't know that it would be so specific between men and women that are married when it comes to passion. And I said, well, what do you mean? They said, well, we knew that men and women would be different on this. We just didn't know how critically different they would be. Well, I said, well, what'd you find? They said, well, they discovered that married men prefer to have sex on days of the week that begin with the letter T. Isn't that bizarre? Tuesday and Thursday seem to top the list, as well as Saturday and Sunday. today, tomorrow, Thanksgiving, you know, just the T days. So. Right? We don't need a research study to tell us that there's a gender difference when it comes to passion in marriage, but let me ask you, if you're married, how many of you have passion at a 10 out of 10 every day of the week, every week out of the year, all your married life long? Can I get a witness? Right? We don't have passion at that level all the time. You do? Your husband forced you to raise your hand? That's a whole different seminar. Right, but we don't have passion at that level all the time, and that's okay. It's just a third of what love is, right?
Exactly. So if passion's the biological side of love, on the other side of that triangle, you can write another word, and that word is intimacy. Intimacy, this is more the emotional side of love. This is that part of love that makes you feel totally relaxed in somebody's presence, like you are totally safe. They get you. They understand you. You don't have to have your guard up. And it's that wonderful feeling you get when you just know that you're operating on the same page. Like, ever have that moment? Humor is so good about this. It just reveals intimacy. I know for us, we'll be in a social setting, like at a party or something, and I don't know, someone says something, and the two of us think it's the funniest thing we've ever heard. We dissolve into laughter and we kind of regroup and look around and nobody else in the whole room thought it was funny. Ever had a moment like that? And I am so thankful for him in that moment because I'm like, what would I do without you? You're the only one who gets it. You know, you look at life through the same quirky lens I do and I would be so lonely without sharing that. Intimacy. And it's also that deep sense of connection we get when we know that we are in this story together and really there's nobody else in the world that understands our life the way we do. You know, it's just really that sense of sharing over time. And I know for us, one of the dramatic pieces of our story was having a little preemie. We had this little 1-pound preemie born 3 months before his due date. That was very connecting for us because our hearts are on our sleeve. We're feeling fragile. I mean, the whole thing, the neonatal intensive care and the multiple surgeries. Finally, when we brought him home from the hospital, I remember how excited we were. And it was just this amazing experience that bonded us. We got so excited on a Friday night. We thought it was the best thing we could ever do if we didn't have anything going. We just put him in our family room in the middle of the floor and just watch him for hours. He would wiggle and we'd just be so proud, or he'd make a noise. We could do that, and we discovered our friends didn't find it quite as interesting as we did, but we didn't care. For us, that was complete intimacy because we were so bonded through that story. Emotional side of love.
Yeah, it's that you get me and I get you like nobody else right. On the planet. We're reading off the same sheet of music, and that's intimacy, right? Whether anybody else is in it, we get it, right? And you know that experience. But let me ask you, if you're married, how many of you have intimacy 10 out of 10 every day of the week, every week of the year, all your married life long, right? Not if you're like most people. Except for maybe this guy down here, right? Yeah. We have a lot in common. Similar heritage, similar values and dreams. We got a lot, same name. I mean, we got a lot in common, right? But there's times I wonder, does she even know me? How could she have said that? How could she have thought that, right? Well, again, it's just a third of what love is. On the base of this triangle, you can write another word, and that word is commitment.
Right.
Commitment. And if passion is the biological side of love, and intimacy is the emotional side of love, mm-hmm. commitment is the willful side of love.
Right.
This is that part of love. You can kind of think of these as the hot, warm, and cold ingredients of love, by the way. Passion, intimacy, and commitment. Commitment is that willful part of love that says, in spite of all the unpredictability in my life, in spite of all these things that are uncertain, mm-hmm. in spite of all these things I can't quite pin down, I'm going to make one thing in my life rock solid. Mm-hmm. And that's my relationship with you. Now, where does that come from? Your hormones? Your emotions? No, it comes from your will. It's the willful part of love. So let me ask it the third time about commitment. But don't answer, because I know how most of you as married couples, if you're married, would respond to this. Do you have commitment at a 10 out of 10 every day of the week, every week of the year, all your married life long? Most of you go, yeah, we got that settled a long time ago. All right, I get that. That's the big I do. Mm-hmm. But there's kind of like an energy level, right, that infuses that.
Yeah, because life is so demanding. There are seasons in life where we get our energy and our attention fully distracted. There's a sick child. There's a deadline at work. There's something consuming. And even though we're committed to the relationship, we don't really have time to live into that commitment with our actions.
So the energy
emotions.
Level that goes into the commitment yeah. isn't always at a 10 out of 10, even though the big commitment is there.
Right.
In fact, the bottom line of all this research that was done at Yale by Sternberg was to say this: love is very, very fluid. Mm-hmm. Love is not a static thing that you fall into and you fall out of. Love changes. There's an ebb and flow to it. There's seasons to it. There's passages to it that are pretty predictable, by the way. But love changes. In fact, that's why whenever we get a chance to speak to a room full of engaged couples, mm-hmm. we always tell them, hey, if you wake up some morning after you get married, you have passion, 10 out of 10, intimacy, 10 out of 10, commitment, 10 out of 10. You roll over to your partner and he or she has all three of these ingredients at a 10 out of 10. We tell them, we got some advice for you. Take the day off work. This is going to be a good day, right? But don't expect to wake up every morning in married life with all three of those ingredients at a 10 out of 10. Love doesn't work that way. Love is very, very fluid. Now, I got to tell you something before I illustrate how love changes even over the lifespan. The research that was done at Yale 15 years ago, when that first happened, any social scientist that was in the kind of the relationship space was like, oh, groundbreaking, this massive study that's been done, biggest study ever on romantic love and so forth, thought we were really breaking new ground. And then one day, you remember this, we were on an airplane, and we happened to just be reading the same passage of scripture at that moment, and we were reading out of the Message, and we came across this verse, 1 Corinthians chapter 6, 16 and 17, where, and this is from the Message, where it says this: sex is as much spiritual mystery as physical fact. We must not pursue the kind of sex or passion that avoids commitment and intimacy, leaving us more lonely than ever. Long before this study was ever done at Yale, there it was, right in God's words: passion, intimacy, and commitment. But it's very, very fluid. In fact, if you were to look at love over the lifespan and you were to chart its course on a scale of 1 to 10, in fact, you ask couples that have just gotten married, hey, how's your love life? What do they tell you? Scale of 1 to 10. Yeah, it's 10, right? Doesn't get any better than this. That's why we got married. It's fantastic. You come back to that couple, I don't know, 3-4 years later, what do you think? Still 10 out of 10? It's taking a little bit of a dip, right? Come back to that couple, let's say, 8 years later, a little bit more of a dip, right? 12, 14 years later, 18, 20 years later. One of the things we know about a couple's love life is it reaches an all-time low about the time they have teenagers in their home. Can I get a witness now? Right? It doesn't necessarily have anything to do with those kids, does it?
No, I mean, it's midlife, it's demands, the sandwich generation, caring for older adults, everything that goes in that mix.
We know the vast majority of divorces take place right about here, along this continuum, just a few years into marriage, and it's that state of disillusionment. Well, I didn't know it was going to be like this. Mm-hmm. If I had any idea it was going to be like this, I never would have got together with you in the first place, right? That state of disillusionment. And then we see a big spike in divorce in North America right now, right here, right before the empty nest. It's kind of like mom and dad holding it together for the kids, and the kids leave the nest, and mom and dad split. Sad, obviously, for a lot of reasons, but one of them is, do you know that these couples are missing out on the very best part of married life? Why? Because in the second half of marriage, the level of satisfaction climbs so dramatically, in fact, and so quickly, it literally begins to go off the charts. I mean, it's higher than it was when they first got married. Social scientists no longer have instruments to measure how happy these couples are. Isn't that good news? Some of you are going, well, yeah, it's good news if you're on the upswing. What if you're just starting off, you know? And some of your engaged couples here are going, this is the worst sermon I've ever heard, right? Here's the really good news. You don't have to go through. This is known as the inverted bell curve. You'll find it in any marriage and family textbook. It's looking at big sociological trends, right? It's not about every couple going through this.
No, but we know that over life with that fluidity of love, this is the process. But you don't have to go through that if you know how to cultivate these ingredients.
Yeah, and what are these ingredients? Number one is? Oh, man, let's try that one more time. Number one is? Passion. Number two is? And number three is? Right. How many of you have ever been on a whitewater rafting trip? Any of you? Okay, a lot of you, right? We live in a great part of the world for this. I did this for the first time a few years back with some buddies of mine at the university where we teach, Seattle Pacific. And man, we were like little kids getting ready for this. I mean, the level of excitement, anticipation could not have been. We were like, you know, talking about the kind of candy bars we were going to bring with. Let's bring Reese's. Yeah, that'll be good, you know. And we were looking at the different brochures and trying to figure out where to go and what part of the, you know, the state and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, look at this one. These people are really having a good time. Yeah, but I like the color of these boats. Those are cool, you know. This might be a good one. And then we discovered this one comes with a barbecue dinner. And so that's, you know, end of discussion. That's the one we're going to do. And so we sign up for that. We make our way to Eastern Washington, and we pile out of the car, and we're all kind of rowdy and, like, ready to go. And we kind of go over this little embankment and run down and see the boat, and we jump into it. The river guide's there. He goes, hey, guys, get out of the boat. A few things we got to go through once. Yeah. Well, come on, let's go. And he says, well, first of all, and he goes through this whole spiel. He said, first of all, it's early spring. He said, you're going to want to wear a wetsuit. And so he gives each one of us a wetsuit, and we're zipping these things up and kind of making fun of the way we look and stuff. And then he hands each one of us a helmet. We start to strap these helmets on, and it slowly dawns on us, hey, why are we wearing helmets? You know? Nobody in the brochure had a helmet on, you know? And he said, well, for insurance purposes, on this kind of river, you got to wear a helmet. And we said, what do you mean this kind of a river? And that's where we all learned. None of us had ever done this before. We all learned together that they rank the difficulty level of these rivers, which many of you know. This one happened to be near the top. I wish I could remember the name of it. It's a dam-released river in eastern Washington, only available 2 weeks out of the year, has portions known as the meat grinder and, you know, stuff like that. And all we knew is it came with a barbecue dinner. That's the only reason we were there, right? And so now this guy has our full attention, and we're hanging on every word he's saying, and kind of everybody's getting, you know, serious now. And he says, now when you fall out of the boat, and he didn't say if, he said when you fall out of the boat, he said make sure you have a buddy that's going to be helping you get back into the boat. It gets pretty tumultuous, and so, you know, now we're making our alliances and stuff. You want to be my buddy and all that kind of thing. And he said the other thing is that... he said, when the boat flips over, he said, you will be kind of wanting to swim around and stuff. He said, don't do that. Resist that. He said, what you want to do is lean back, allow your feet, your legs to come forward, and as the river takes you in its current, that way your legs, your feet, they'll serve as kind of a shock absorber against the jagged boulders you'll be running into. And so we took comfort in that. And then he just went through the rest of his thing. And finally, it's time to get into the boat, and everybody's quiet. Everybody's in their own headspace, you know. And so I'm thinking, I'm going to sit on this corner. It's kind of a rope handle thing. And I'm just, in my mind, I'm thinking, even if I, you know, the boat flips over, I'll be here holding on when it gets back. You know, it's just crazy things. And, of course, that doesn't work that way because the guy that you give all the money to, he gives you an oar and proceeds to yell at you for the remainder of the day, right? And I remember around noontime on this trip, I was so miserable. I mean, I had a buzzing headache. My body was freezing cold, yet my face was sunburned. And by the way, that thing about look for your buddy when you fall in the boat, forget that. It's every man for himself when this happens. And I just remember saying my muscles were aching sore, and I remember thinking to myself, how can I get out of this? This is misery. I would pay double the money at this point to be able to go home from here. And of course, you can't do that. You're in the middle of a river. There's no exit. You can't pull off, you know, and so you carry on. And what we finally got to the campsite that night, just around dusk. They already had the fire going. They had the food cooking. And we sat around that fire, and we had that barbecue dinner. It was fantastic. And right as we were finishing up the barbecue dinner, they brought out three ingredients: chocolate bars, marshmallows, graham crackers, and we had s'mores. Is there anything better? We couldn't make them fast enough, and we're pounding those things down. And what do you think the conversation was like about that time around the campfire? I think I was the first one to say it. I said, guys, it doesn't get any better than this. Mm-hmm. We got to do this more often. Man, this has been a blast. Remember when I fell out of the boat and you guys wouldn't let me back in? That was hilarious, you know? Here I was literally romanticizing this trip that just a few minutes earlier... few hours earlier, I was desperate. I would have paid double the money to get out of the thing. Now, don't want to stretch the analogy too far, but married life is a little bit like that whitewater rafting trip, and you start off up here, and you're having discussions, you know, about the kind of, not candy bars you're going to bring, but maybe what kind of china pattern we'll have, or are we going to have a cat or a dog, or where are we going to live, or whatever it is, right? And then you have a few years go by, and whoa, didn't know that was going to happen. You get your first little bit of white water, right? And you kind of lose your footing. A few more years go by, and the boat flips over. Good night. Nobody told us about this in premarriage counseling. This is crazy, right? But you somehow hold it together, and you keep moving forward, and you get clear down at the bottom of that thing, and you have teenagers in your home, and you realize you need a helmet, and that wasn't in the brochure either, you know? And then you carry on. And for all those couples that... cultivate those ingredients. One more time, what are they? Number one is?
Passion.
Number two is? Number three is? The good news is, s'more time is coming, right? The really good news is you don't have to go through
exactly
this
right.
If you know how to cultivate and navigate
right.
That tumultuous time, because we all face it, right?
Exactly.
Love is never at a 10 out of 10 every day of the week, every week out of the year, all your married life. Love changes. Mm-hmm. And so because of that, what can we do to make a difference?
So we want to give you some tools that can really equip you to cultivate those when you don't find them at their fullest. One of the simplest things we know is just really the framework for a conversation. And all you have to do is this little exercise where you turn to your spouse and just say, how's your love life? And it's just a simple question. But what you have in mind are those three ingredients, passion, intimacy, and commitment. And they're going to be the framework for you to reflect on what's going on with us. And you're not diagnosing the marriage or your spouse, but you're using those questions just to take a little look inside and think, how am I doing internally? How connected have I been feeling to you lately? How emotionally connected? How much energy have I had to devote time to our relationship? So if I had to rate all those things on a 1 to 10 scale, where would I say I'm at right now when it comes to my investment, my experience of our relationship? And you each take a minute, reflect on that, and then you share those responses.
Right, so you're not diagnosing the relationship or your partner, just where am I at on these three things, and where are you going? And so every pastor wants to do that when someone stands up. So this might be like a Saturday morning, we're out to breakfast or something like that. One of us will just say, hey, how's your love life? We each draw this on our paper napkin or a little piece of scratch paper and just on our own side of the table, just rank where am I. So I'm thinking to myself, okay, passion for me is pretty good, you know, a little room for improvement. I'm going to give that a good solid 9, okay? Intimacy also, feeling close to Leslie, a little room for improvement, I'll give that a 9 too. Commitment, never been more focused and committed to Leslie, I'm going to give that a solid 10, all right? So I've done that on my side of the table, on my little paper napkin. Leslie's doing the same thing on her side of the table. She's thinking to herself, passion for me is pretty good, a little room for improvement, I'll give that a solid 2. And intimacy a 2, and I'm still committed to him, not sure why, all right? And so we both do that on our side of the table, and then we slide these across the table to each other, and what happens? She cries and I storm off. No, what happens? We start to talk about it, right? In fact, we say this is the world's world's greatest shortcut to a meaningful conversation about your love life. It really is.
Yeah,
and we've been doing this for a long time.
It's not like a magic pill, but it's amazing what a little bit of awareness can do to transform your ability to make the smallest changes that really open this up.
And this is an exercise in awareness, right?
You
want to talk about how we cultivate each of these three? What do we
Let's go ahead and do that.
All right, so we're negotiating here on what to include and not include, I can tell, right? Keep moving. Let's talk about what do you do if passion is not as high as it should be? How do you cultivate passion? In fact, I want to give some advice here to the guys in particular because sometimes we kind of miss this point when it comes to passion in marriage. In fact, guys, I want to give you something to do if you're married that will help you cultivate more passion in your marriage with nothing more than just 10 seconds, does not even involve a conversation. 10 seconds. You don't have to say a word. Maybe it's your day off. Maybe you're in your den. Maybe you're out working in the yard. Maybe you're working on your car or whatever it is, and you're thinking to yourself, I'm just going to breeze through the kitchen, get something to drink. You're walking straight toward that refrigerator, and then you see your wife standing at the kitchen sink, okay? If you will do this, you just come up behind. In fact, let me illustrate this. You come up behind her. Don't have to say a word, all right? She's working at the kitchen sink. You just come up behind her. You put your hands on her shoulders. Now, it's important to remember to keep your hands on her shoulders, all right? And then you just lean forward like this. Don't have to say a word. Put your cheek next to hers just like this. Maybe a little squeeze here on the shoulders, all right? Now, this is the critical part. Watch this next step. You walk away. And I know most of you are going, I don't get it, all right? She gets it.
That's
I trust
right.
trust me on that.
That's
because
right.
it's those tender touches, right? We have a friend that Kevin Lehman says sex begins in the kitchen.
Right.
And that's what we're talking about here, right? It's those tender touches that cultivate more passion in a marriage.
Well, there's so much power in those tender touches because it's one reminder that you're cherishing us.
Right. And cherish, that's a key word. And did you feel cherished, women, on Valentine's? Don't answer out loud, but did you feel cherished? That's the key, right? And most guys, in fact, guys, what does it mean to cherish a woman? That's what I thought. Okay. This is critical for guys because women, if you ask a woman to list the top 10 things she needs from her man, I guarantee you 90% of the time, we know this from research, 90% of the time, one of the things will be, well, I want him to cherish me. All right? You can ask men to list the top 100 things he wants from a woman. You'll be hard-pressed to find a guy in this room that goes, I'll tell you one thing, she better cherish me, all right? So there's a big gap, and that's why those
right.
Tinder touches are so,
huge.
So important. What about intimacy?
Yeah, when it comes to intimacy, I would just say to the women, because I have not met a woman yet who doesn't really treasure this part of a relationship, and we're so hardwired for it. And intimacy for us comes so easily through great communication, through great conversations. And we have that with our girlfriends almost reflexively. I mean, it's just so natural, not always as natural with this person we love so much. So one time, I was actually in my small group of women, we talk so easily, and I just read a study on men and emotional intimacy, and so I brought it to the group, and I said, I want to hear what you think of this, and here's what it says about men. When men want to be emotionally connected to someone, what they do is go share an activity with that person, and it's in the process of sharing that activity, doing something active together, they feel completely connected to that person, and that's totally bonding. That's emotional intimacy for a guy. And all of us were like, what? What are you talking about? For us, the activity is the conversation. But what this study was saying is that guys don't feel relaxed into a conversation unless their spirits are joined through sharing something active together that really bonds them.
Right. And that is so, most women, I can't tell you how many women that will complain in a counseling session to a marriage and family therapist or something and say, hey, we go out to a dinner or something and all he does is just sit there. He doesn't have anything to say. And I'll ask him questions, but it just never goes anywhere. And that's because a man's spirit opens
right.
up in the context of activity.
Yeah, we don't need activity. Talking is our activity. We
right.
connect. We share our hopes and dreams. It just flows easily.
And guys don't call up other guys and go, hey, you want to get together and talk, you know? We go do something, right? You want to play tennis? Do you want to go to the movies? Go to the game? We'll hunt.
Right.
We'll fish. We'll do something, right? It's in the context of that activity.
That our spirits open up.
Makes that happen. All right. And then the third thing, that's passion, that's intimacy. Third thing, what about cultivating more commitment? And again, we're talking about the energy that goes
right.
into that commitment.
Yeah, and so this all comes down to time. Capturing time together, getting those moments that we miss out on sharing with each other.
Yeah, there's fascinating research on time and marriage. You go to the marriage and family section of Barnes & Noble, you'll be hard-pressed to find any resources there on time. Go to the business section, find all kinds of stuff there. But not on relationship. And yet it's one of the biggest
right.
felt needs that couples have is how do we cultivate more time
yeah, which
together?
We identify with.
Right. Do you know what the single most important minute of your marriage is? Most of us walk by it every day and don't even give it a second thought. It's that 60 seconds that you have at the end of the day when you greet each other.
Yeah.
The research says that sets the tone for your relationship that evening. How you greet each other. Do you have some eye contact, a tender touch, just for a moment, right? By the way, research also shows that the majority of us greet our pet before we greet our spouse at the end of the day. Somebody said because they're actually glad to see us. But but this idea of time.
Well, I'll tell you, one of the most powerful insights I got as we were researching this, and it really opened up time together for us, was realizing that we don't relate to time the same way. We don't
right.
experience time the same way. We don't even use it as a resource in
right.
exactly
we
the same way.
We have different time styles,
right.
and we did a lot of research on this just for ourselves,
yep.
and then began to share it with other couples. We can give you your time style here just in 2 minutes, we can give you your time style by helping you answer two questions. And here they are. The first of these questions is, are you more subjective with your time or more objective with your time? In other words, are you more unscheduled or scheduled?
Mm-hmm.
No, I got to tell you, I'm very scheduled. You can ask me, what am I doing, you know, three Thursdays from now at 3 o'clock? I can get on my calendar. I can tell you exactly what I'll be doing. Leslie, unscheduled, just the opposite of me.
Yeah, I feel pinned down when I have a calendar.
Very busy
like
woman. I don't know how she keeps it all straight, but she does. You don't even have a date book.
Nope.
Right? And in fact, a couple years ago, we had this routine. She would come into my office at night, you know, as I kind of was putting my thoughts together after tucking in the boys and all that. And she'd say, well, what's going on tomorrow? What are you doing tomorrow? And I'd go through my little stuff, and I thought, oh, you know what I'll do? Let's just connect our calendars on Outlook, like I'm sure many of you have done, and so you can just look at that any time, and I can see what you're doing at any time, and that was at least maybe 3 years ago mm-hmm. now you did that, and in 3 years, how many things do you think she's put on her calendar? One thing, her birthday, all right? Literally, all right? So very unscheduled.
Right.
Okay, how many of you would say, I'm kind of like Leslie, I'm more unscheduled than scheduled, all right? How many say I'm more scheduled than unscheduled, all right? Here's a second question. Are you more future-oriented or present oriented? Right. Do you get energy out of the here and now or out of the there and then?
Yeah, and it's not just what gives you energy, but it's where is your attention? What are you mindful of? Are you fully present in this moment, or do you get all of your attention focused on what is to happen then?
And we happen to be the opposite here, yep, too. Leslie's very much about the present, what's happening now. I'm very energized by the future and what's about to happen. Mm-hmm. Leslie says I'm a visitor from the future sometimes. I love planning, thinking about what's coming down the road. So how many would say, yeah, Les, I'm kind of like you. I'm more future-oriented. Okay, how many say I'm about the here and now? All right. So how you answer those two questions drops you into one of four groups. And as we wrap this thing up, I want to give you a sense of what that is. As you can see, one group is unscheduled and present-oriented. How many of you are in that group? Unscheduled and present-oriented. We call these folks accommodators.
Yeah, accommodators are in the here and now, but very unscheduled. You want to have very flexible boundaries and accommodate anything that emerges in the present moment that's obviously really important to you. I mean, if I wake up and the sun's shining, I have to accommodate a walk around Green Lake. I'm not going to waste that, you know? So you want to resist being scheduled because you want to accommodate urgent priorities that emerge in the moment.
And so you're very subjective about the whole. I can ask Leslie, he'll say, hey, let's walk down to Starbucks. And I'll say, we don't have time. She says, no, it's just like 5 minutes from here. I said, no, it's like 25 minutes from here. She'll say, well, it feels like 5 minutes.
Yep.
I said, I don't care what it feels like. It's 25 minutes. That's what it is, right?
Right.
But because it does, because you like it, it feels like less time. It's subjective. All right, how many in this quadrant up here, present-oriented and scheduled? We call these folks processors. You process time, right?
Yeah, and this means that you're present in the here and now, but you move through time very deliberately. If you have a friend like this, you can schedule lunch with them, show up, and they are so good about being fully attentive and focused on you until it's 1:15 and they look in their calendar and they have another appointment, and it's like they close their book and they're gone. They don't know you anymore. You know, they've deliberately moved forward, and now that's getting their full attention, their process.
Then you have people that are scheduled and future oriented. Raise your hand if this is you, all right? This is my quadrant as well. These people are planners. Mm-hmm. I haven't done the research on this. I'm guessing these people likely to have higher IQs, probably,
It's so wrong.
No, we always feel like our quadrant is the best one. None of these is better than the other. It's just how it is. It's really an exercise in awareness. And then finally, we have people that are unscheduled and future-oriented. These are fun people because these are the dreamers among us. These are people that are also unscheduled but very future-oriented. And so you ask them things like, where do you want to go for dinner? They don't actually talk about restaurants that exist. They like to dream up potential restaurants that might be out there, you know? They are dreamers. So these four time styles, what difference does this
make? Yeah, that really opens up awareness about how you can get in sync with your spouse. I know for us, we'd go on a date night and we'd head out the door and I'd say, what do you want to do? And he'd say, you know what we should do tonight? Let's plan our next 5 date nights. Suddenly, I would lose all my energy and feel drained, but you would be energized. So we quickly learned how to get our spirits more in sync by having more spontaneity for me, more planning for you, and
yeah, because it really gives you more empathy if you can understand each other's time style. So if you're looking to cultivate that energy that goes into commitment, this is a nice way to do that. And in fact, if you want to drill down on this a little bit more, go to our website, lessandleslie.com, because there's a cool little free assessment that you can take there. It'll take you less than 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. You'll get a 3-page report, and actually you'll get your percentage, not just of the one quadrant you're in, because truth be told, you're probably in more than one of those. I tend to be a dreamer and a planner and so forth. So anyway, you might want to check that out. As we wrap this up, it just seems appropriate that we might quote the most quoted passage of Scripture this weekend, and in fact, in the world, it's given at almost every wedding. You have it printed out on the back of your notes there. 1 Corinthians chapter 13. If you have been around the church at all, you've heard this thing quoted so much, you can probably even remember parts of it. Do you remember? Love is patient, love is kind, and then it gets into what love isn't, and so forth. And listen, we've heard this so many times. We thought, how could we hear this with new ears? And we started to collect unique translations of 1 Corinthians chapter 13. And so we wanted to leave you with, maybe just read a portion of this.
Yeah,
but you'll
very
hear
unique
it,
paraphrase.
You'll hear it with a different kind of ears.
I'll just lift out a few. If I go to language school and learn to speak 100 different languages and preach to thousands all over the world and lead them all to Christ, but I have hate in my heart in a silent war with my neighbor who's built his privacy fence on my side of the boundary line, my words are nothing except the screaming of a heavy metal rock band. If I have a doctorate in theology, science, language arts, and literature, and I could raise mountains out of the dust of the plains, but I'm only concerned with the size of my paycheck, wardrobe, and house, it is as if I don't exist, have never existed. Love walks the floor all night with a crying baby and smiles as she greets new visitors in Sunday school. She doesn't want what she doesn't have, and she doesn't say, look how wonderful I am, but look how great you are. And it goes on to say, I could work with the poor like Mother Teresa. I could write literature like C.S. Lewis. I could preach like Billy Graham and be a great leader like Martin Luther King Jr. and a martyr like Gandhi. But until I love like Jesus, my soul is lost.
A new way to hear some pretty familiar words on this Valentine weekend. Thanks for the privilege of getting to talk to you today. Really enjoyed
it. Can we say thanks to Les and Leslie one more time? Hey, actually, before you take off there, Les and Leslie have some resources available over at the Connect Center in the main lobby, and maybe you could tell us a little bit about those.
Yeah, actually, I'd love to tell you about two things. One is that if you're interested, we will send you a complimentary devotion every Wednesday morning. You can just sign up at lesandleslie.com. We'd love to send that to you. You won't get on any other lists or anything else. And then we brought a resource here today. The Time-Starved Marriage is the book. We literally, for our own marriage, we went to the bookstore to find something just for us. We couldn't find so much as a brochure on it, and that's what set us on the course of a few years to study this, and this book is the result. It not only gives you your time style, it gives you all kinds of information on reclaiming the moments that you might be missing together. There's a his, her workbook deal that goes along with it, too. So anyway, we have some of those out somewhere that you're going to tell us, and Leslie and I will be there. By the way, if you're curious, any kind of profit that is ever generated from a book like this that we sell goes to needy children, so you can always feel good about that. Both of the children live with us, and so it's very nice. So,
and can we say thanks to Leslie just one more time? And their resources will be available at the Connect Center over in the main lobby, where we also have dinner for you available right after service. And as we close this time out, will you do me a favor? Will you pray with me just for a moment? Father, thank you so much, Lord, that we can draw on the wisdom, God, of those who have really dedicated discovering what it means to be in relationship and marriage within your parameters. Lord, as we draw on the wisdom of the parents of Drs. Les and Leslie, Lord, it's my prayer that for all of us here, God, that wherever we're at in our relational life, whatever our next right step is in you, God, I pray that you'd give us the humility, Lord, and also the wisdom to be able to take that. Lord, I pray that really simply if it's investing time or if it's investing in resource, God, to make our marriage a priority in our life, that we do that. Lord, if it's something where, God, we need a little more help even than that. God, I pray that you'd even give us the courage and the boldness to say, hey, we need some professional help here. God, I pray wherever my friends are at here this weekend, Lord, that you'd be present, that you'd be available as our God. Thanks, Lord, also that you care about our marriages, that you care about our relationships, that Lord, you speak into this area of our life. God, we love you. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen. Amen. Well, hey, in just a moment, we're going to receive our connection cards and our offering as well, if you've come prepared to participate in that way. There's something that looks just like this inside your program, and this is our connection card. If you're new to Timberlake Church, I encourage you to fill out as much information as you're comfortable with. Drop it in one of the buckets as it comes by here in just a moment. We're not going to show up at your house or anything like that. We just love to help you stay informed with everything we have going on here at Timberlake. We're also going to receive our offering at this time. This is something we do every weekend at Timberlake. It's an opportunity that we have to say, God, we want to put you first, even in this area of our life, even in our finances, God, and we trust you with this area of our life as well. So here's what we're going to do. The band's going to play a final song. Will you stand? And ushers, will you please come forward?